I like to break it down to three things, and I call them the three C's: cash flow, credit, and collateral, right? Now, you don't have to have all three to get funding, right? But we can work with one, right? But the more of those three C's that you have, the better rates and terms you're going to get across the board.
What's better than earning money from a 9-to-5 job? It's earning money while you sleep, which is made possible if you start investing. You're listening to the Real Estate Investing Demystified with your very own dynamic duo, Ava Benesaki and August Biniez. Tune in as we discuss everything real estate, both on the passive and active sides. We feature life-changing stories of today's real estate leaders that will help build your own roadmap to success. This is a show that will lead you to a diversified portfolio, a much bigger revenue, and a next-level venture that brings you a smooth cash flow. Let's get this episode started. All right, welcome back to Real Estate Investing Demystified. Today's going to be a great discussion because I wanted to talk about this. You can have two businesses side by side that have the same business model and they're in the exact same industry. And you can have one business who goes hyperbolic and has explosive success. And then you can have the other business who's just in like the stagnant mode, right? Do you ever see this happening? And you're like, it happens all the time. And it brings great curiosity from the outside looking in saying, what does that one company have? Or what is that one company doing that the other is not doing? So our guests today, we're going to be getting some of these questions answered for us. So I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So let's, I was going to kind of warm up the audience about something totally different, but you got right.
Let's hear it. Go ahead. Let's hear it.
Taking place in the world, and I was going to take a kind of moment of sadness for what's happened in Canada with that school shooting that took place.
Yeah.
A lot of Canadians are afraid of the U.S. and have one of the most strict gun laws in the world. But now in the most liberal province in Canada, in one of the most liberal cities in Canada, we had a mass school shooting with a transgender individual who did that. And the police chief being interviewed by the reporters, a reporter called a transgender person him, and the police officer got really upset and corrected her, the person who was asking these questions. But the reason I bring this up is we've made the move from Canada to the U.S., and a lot of people we talk to, some of them very close to us, are really afraid about gun laws in the U.S. and things that happen, mass shootings that happen in the U.S., and some of the reasons that people don't make the move to the U.S. or even vacation in the U.S.
Yes.
because of potential for shootings. But you can see this can happen anywhere in the world. You know,
it's very scary.
Stabbings take place and people get killed. So this kind of throws out this idea of these gun laws or what have you. But after that moment of discussion about that topic, happy to kind of excited about our guest today. I was at they come from very accomplished backgrounds. So we're kind of excited preparing for the show. So I'll start right away with Luigi.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show, my friend Matt. Welcome to the show. But Luigi, let's start with you right away. Brooklyn Law School, political science background, and I think with your last name sounds first name and last name sounds pretty Italian, and brings up thoughts about right away about Rudy Giuliani, the mayor of New York at some point, and what have you. And I think he was an attorney, but I don't think he was the what was his title that he had. Anyways, he was advisor to Trump, but was
associate attorney general.
There you go, associate attorney general. So we see you here talking about business financing, but so talk to us about the road. How did you end up here? Did you ever have any thoughts about being involved in possibly politics or running for office? Talk to us about that in your background there a bit.
Politics, absolutely not. So let's get that started. But first of all, thank you so much for having us. We were looking forward to this for a while. We were blessed with having you on our podcast. And it was honestly, to this day, one of our most watched, best followed episodes. So thank you so much for having us on. I didn't really have a choice in the matter. You know, during that Sunday afternoon with pasta and sauce and a glass of wine, and yes, 11-year-olds can have one glass of wine. There was one mandate when we were younger. This came down to all our siblings, to me and all my siblings. We had to go to school. So whether I went to law school or architecture school or became a CPA or became a doctor, I didn't really have a choice. I had to go to school. That was the one mandate. My grandparents learned that the way out of the middle class, blue collar grind was through education.
Yeah.
There are other paths, but in their humility, they saw that that was the path.
I happened to go
to law school.
Middle class is usually pretty educated. So workforce is like, you know, Italians coming from that tough beginnings usually end up in the workforce, right? That's how you get yourself out of the workforce, is through education.
My dad was a mechanic. I could still change a tire in less than 90 seconds.
Oh,
wow. Nice. Awesome.
Very. We came from that same, we were just at a tour for our two-year-olds for a beautiful school here, a private school here in Naples, Florida. And we're, August and I are already getting excited. I mean, our child is two, but when he turns three, he's going to be joining this private school that is going to, you know, make sure that his kind of wires his brain right to go right into college.
Don't get me started. This is a topic of conversation in our household all the time. And I've come to the following conclusion. We are putting the standards that was once relegated to 5 and 6 year olds to now 3 and maybe even 2.5 year olds,
yeah,
to get them started sooner, right? Yeah. So I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I don't know. I'm not an educator and I'm learning as I go. You know, the one thing I know about being a parent is I'm super humble and I try to make as few mistakes as possible. Mm-hmm. But yes, that's the trend. The trend is now to have, you know, the kid go into kindergarten with a master's degree.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah. Percent success rate, because it goes from, what is this, KP1?
It goes pre-K3 all the way to grade 12. And a child's genius really starts from, what's the age, August? From
starts right away.
Right away, okay. Exactly.
Let's get Matt in here.
Yeah, Matt, we're excited to...
About yourself, Wall Street.
For 2 decades, I believe, right? So tell us about that. What was your journey like?
Yeah, it was very different. You know, academics in my house were not held to as high of a standard as Luigi's. So I barely graduated high school, right? Wasn't really sure what I was going to do. My father was in elevator contracting. The rest of my family was NYPD. At that time, to become a police officer, you needed 2 years of college. I didn't have any college. So the original game plan was, all right, I'm going to go get 2 years, an associate's degree, and I'm going to go be a police officer, or I'm going to go work with my dad. One or the other, right? Turns out I went a totally different route. I called an ad out of a newspaper, if anybody remembers what that was, and I landed a job for a firm right across the street from the World Trade Center, right? Flash forward, 9/11 happens. We're there that day. I'm literally half a mile away from the World Trade Center. Everything gets shut down. The firm that I worked for would be typically what you call like maybe a boiler room, if you saw that, right? Just people on the phone all day long. Now, when I say boiler room, we didn't do anything wrong, right? We didn't do anything that was out of bounds. It's just what people call it. Merrill Lynch, Solomon Smith Barney back then. It was football fields of people on the phone, essentially, right?
You're not even thinking about pump and dumps, but keep going.
Yeah, no, definitely no pump and dumps. So what, long story short, a company by the name of Ladenburg Thalmann buys the firm that I'm at. Ladenburg Thalmann happens to be one of the oldest companies traded on the New York Stock Exchange, right? So I got my experience from Wall Street and everything basically that I know about life from on-the-job training. No trust funds, no silver spoon, no college degree, smiling, dialing, talking to people, watching and learning and taking everything in.
Yeah, wow. And this is great. We just want to touch on your guys' background because, you know, an attorney, somebody from Wall Street is a perfect synergistic duo to help, you know, businesses and business owners. And what is it that you do? Small business lending. Any questions before we
get? An advisory? No, let's get into it. So yeah,
that's the type of advisors you want to have. Somebody who understands Wall Street, somebody who understands law, somebody can provide advice to these firms. So give us a crash course. What is it exactly that you guys do?
I'll make it very, very simple. Matt and I are the wildest generalists you can imagine. We are just generalists. We know a little bit about a lot of subject, which allows us to help the chiropractor, allows us to help the dentist, the contractor, the medical service provider, the trades. We know a little bit about many fields and many interests. Now, our team relies upon the two of us. As much as we grow and as much as we like to delegate, at the end of the day, Matt and I set the tempo. And that tempo was set by the classic, and I'm sure you've heard this a million times, the visionary and the implementer. Matt is the visionary. He comes up with these great ideas. I'm more in the trenches. And when he says, look, I want a rocket ship that goes to Mars, I have to talk him down to, hey, will you settle for the moon?
Is that for your company and your business? Or that's for when the client comes and sees you, he's a visionary for their business?
Both.
Okay.
Matt comes up with some great ideas and some can be implemented and some cannot be implemented. So sometimes I say, Matt, that is awesome. But can we tone it down a little bit because that's not achievable? And some are, let's talk about this. How can this work?
So essentially, when a client comes to us, most people come to us because they need money for their business, right? Mm-hmm. But they'll come to us and they'll have this dollar figure in their head that they think they need. right? So 9 out of 10 times, they don't need as much money as they think they need, right? 9 out of 10 times, they're borrowing the wrong amounts of money and they're trying to fill a leaky bucket, right? And just slapping duct tape rather than fixing the root of the problem, okay? So when they come to us, we take more of a consultative approach, right? We help them cross their T's, dot their I's. Like Luigi said, we're very good on a lot of subjects, but we're not experts in everything. And we know that. Right. However, I've been doing this for, I've been on Wall Street. Luigi's been in law. My network is probably second to none. I know the right experts to bring in at the right time.
And when you first look at a business, like what's the first thing that you guys analyze?
First thing is we sit down and we have probably a good half hour talk with the person, see what they're looking to do, what they're looking to accomplish. The next thing that we're going to ask for is a set of their financials, right? Everything starts with their financials, okay? I'm talking about tax returns, profit and loss, balance sheets, right? I want to see their corporate docs. They have partners. I want to see the partnership agreements. Do we have any buy or sell agreements in there, right? When they do that, they kind of get naked in front of us. I can't tell you how many times somebody told me, yeah, I do $10 million a year. We have a great business. We know exactly what we're doing. We get the tax returns in. They're doing $10 million, but they're losing $12.
Right.
It doesn't make sense. So what's going on here? Why are we losing so much money? Okay. Then we can have deeper conversations about their KPIs and what's making the money and where they're bleeding. And then we try to, you know, fix that first.
And then you go on to identifying what, you know, where the biggest opportunity in their company might look like. And that's where your visionary skills come in and say, hey, this is how we can take your company to the next level.
Absolutely. You know, a lot of the times it's, you have somebody that's all set in their ways and, you know, they have a website, but they don't do any digital marketing. They're still living in the Stone Age. They're not in the digital age anymore, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Step back. Just, you guys are pretty broad as far as the client type that you assist in both lending and advising. And, you know, you mentioned a few, but when you say small business, what are we talking about? What constitutes a small business?
Yeah, that term's thrown around a lot. So 20 million in revenue and below, right? Someone who's doing between $1 to $20 million is really where we can actually step in, bring in teams to help them implement, probably fractional, anything over 20 million in revenue. You probably have a lot of in-house teams. So they would just work with us on an equity raise or a capital raise. Now, I want to be clear here just so we don't get confused. We have multiple companies. Shield Advisory Group is where we help people scale their business, right? We're more consultants over there. I'm also a certified exit planner. So like we were saying before, somebody comes to us, they want to sell their business. You have two of the same exact businesses. The numbers are exactly the same. Why does one sell for one multiple and the other one get a four multiple? Right? So we come in and we show them what the best in class is doing. So when they do exit, they can get a higher multiple.
Fair enough. Support companies, you even said the word exit, you even help them exit. So totally get that. But let's break them down in silos. Let's talk about lending, right? So business between, it has revenues between $1 and $20 million. It matches your client profile. They come and see you guys. Either they want to scale their company, but for whatever purpose it is, they want to buy equipment, they want to scale, they want to have an exit. That's what they want to, for whatever reason, they're in need of some funding. In most cases, you mentioned that they think they need more money than they actually need. So you guys advise them there. But where does that money come from? Are you guys actual lenders? Is it your own money that you're lending, like a venture capitalist? Do you go out there and find lenders? Are these lenders private? Are they government lending? Give us a crash course on the lending part, and then we'll go with
all of the above.
All of the above.
And allow me to define what the challenge is, okay? To simplify our industry, there are three metrics to allow you to gain access to capital. One is credit, one is revenue, and the other is accountancy. Put those on a spectrum. Let's call that spectrum 1 to 10, okay? So I've got revenue 1 to 10, I've got credit 1 to 10, and I've got accountability 1 to 10, okay? Everyone operates at a different level, okay? So if everyone scores a 10 on that metric, wow, I have a plethora of solutions, okay? Mm-hmm. But if I have a company that is a 8, but a 4, and then a 7, well, I have a certain lender that has that risk tolerance. But if someone is a 2 and a 2 and a 2, well, we need to roll up our sleeves and do a little bit of work, because any capital that we get for you is going to be expensive. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really make sense to gain access to expensive capital, because not many companies can withstand that debt service. So to define the solution, it's better to understand what the problem is. And the problem is we inherit our clients when they come to us, okay? So then it's our position to put them in a position where they are more bankable. Now, there's very little we can do about revenue, right? Because, and I've used this analogy a couple of days ago with an actual client, because they were looking for working capital where they should not have. And I explained to them is, imagine having a fireplace, okay? We are the fuel on your proverbial fire. But when you have a fire, and that fire is your product, your services, your SOPs, you know, you have clearly defined clientele, your team is in place. All you want to do is go from 2x to 5x, or from 5x to 10x. And working capital allows you to do that because you can scale with more machinery, more inventory, more staffing, more software, et cetera, right? You're just having more abundance, okay? But if you're still figuring out, well, I don't know if I want to do I don't know if I want to be an orthodontist, or whether I just want to be a hygienist, or whether I want to do cavities, or maybe I want to do braces, or you have to figure that out first. Because putting fuel on an empty fireplace is not going to trigger any sort of spark. And I hope that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
It does.
You know, Luigi, I like to break it down to three things. And I call them the three C's: cash flow, credit, and collateral, right? Now, you don't have to have all three to get funding, right? But we can work with one, right? But the more of those three C's that you have, the better rates and terms you're going to get across the board. Now, one thing your audience needs to understand is not all lending instruments are equal, right? We have SBA loans here in the United States, right? Which go out 10 years. The rates could be in the single digits, right? We have short-term capital and bridge capital where the rates can be 25 to 30%.
Stay on this SBA loans. SBA loans, I'm part of a WhatsApp group chat, Canadian WhatsApp group chat that buys companies. Mm-hmm. So I hear these guys talking about this stuff all the time. Talk to us about that. Do you guys need to be a servicer of SBA loans? Do you have a middleman you need to go through? What does that look like? What's the basics that's needed? If a mechanic who's doing a couple $1 million in revenues, he wants to buy another building, can they get an SBA loan? Give us a quick crash course on SBA loans.
Lou, you want to take this or you want me to go?
No, sure. Thanks, buddy. So the SBA is a small business administration. Okay. They are not a lender. They are a guarantor. Okay. So imagine if Matt was going to give me a loan, but he knows that 85% of that loan is going to be insured, guaranteed by Real Estate Investing Demystified. Matt would be more inclined to give me that loan. Okay. So that's all the SBA is. The SBA offers these guarantees to federally insured lenders so long as they meet certain guidelines, right? And that's the key. The key is these lenders will package these loans that meet SBA guidelines. And once the SBA says, okay, you meet my guidelines, we check all the boxes, we issue you an SBA number, then the SBA will guarantee a portion of that loan. Okay, now the SBA guarantee comes in many shapes and sizes. They have micro loans, which are small pre-DSCR type loans. You have real estate backed, collaterally backed loans. You have 7A working capital loans. You have real estate acquisition loans. So you have a plethora of SBA type loans for small business. But the key metric there is above average FICO, above average credit. Okay. They want a certain amount of time in business. So usually more than 2 years, because most businesses tend to fail prior to that 2 year mark. And they wanted to see positive EBITDA. Okay. So if you've got those three metrics and you are not in one of those blacklisted type industries, for example, cannabis or pawnbrokers or any of the sin industries.
Predatory type industries.
Well, no, also it's sinful, meaning like, believe it or not, there are like strip lounges and...
vice industries.
Vice industries. Thank you, Matt. Yeah.
You know, let me jump in there and elaborate a little more. So
SBA, just one moment. So for SBAs, right? So just to clarify one point, the SBA is insured through a government agency, but lenders are totally different. So
correct.
When a client comes and sees you guys, do you have to go through these first, get that insurance fixed, the SBA, and then go find the lender, or do they work?
No. So our approach is more consultative, like Matthew says. We get to know the client and then we recommend a solution. The SBA could be a nice solution for them, or it could be a terrible solution. The SBA has a lot of limitations. For example, the maximum exposure you can have with the SBA is $5 million. So if you are growing and you have multiple businesses, and let's say one business has a $2 million SBA loan, but another has a $3 million SBA loan, you've hit that ceiling. You're done. And they also require collateral. So they'll ask you for cross-collateralization. And if I'm partners with Matthew in one business, but then I'm partners with you in another business, I don't know if you want to cross-collateralize Matthew's business.
Now, also to dive in there a little bit deeper, and I think this is where you were going with that, was the SBA has their one set of guidelines, right? Now, we work, every bank in the country, all they want to do is write SBA loans. Why do they want to write SBA loans? Because they know if I lend you $100,000, right? And that loan defaults, they're getting $85,000 back from the government, right? So their liability is only that $15,000. Most banks only want to do that because of that insurance, right? Now, there's other, so the SBA has their one set of guidelines, and I'll give you a perfect example here. SBA, in the SBA guidelines, it says your credit score needs to be 640. Now, the bank has their own set of guidelines, right? And each banking set of guidelines is different. Just because I hit the SBA guidelines doesn't mean Chase is going to give me an SBA loan. Follow me here? Because they're saying their credit requirement is 720. So they won't write that loan. However, there are other banks out there that have more lenient guidelines, right? So when a client comes to us, we sit down with them, we discuss what they're going to use the funds for. We decide the right route to go. And if it is an SBA line, right, that they want to go for and we think it's the right thing, then we go in and we match them to the underwriting guidelines of the banks that we know to ensure that they get at least a shot of getting approved, right? I'm not going to bring somebody with 680 credit to Chase when they have a 720 credit requirement. Right. I'm not going to bring somebody who has a tax lien, right, to another company we use, but I'll bring it to company, another lender B, because I know, you know, up to $15,000, they don't care about that. Right. So it's a matter of not just knowing the SBA guidelines, but each and every guideline from each lending institution that does the SBA loan.
Got it. Could we going on this again, finalizing the lending portion of the discussion? So, business owner comes and sees you guys. I use the example of the mechanic who makes a couple million dollars a year. For SBA, it doesn't matter what industry they're in, right? As long as they're meeting their revenues and credit.
Yeah, as long as they're not in a vice industry. However, it's also banks, though. Banks have different industries that they will lend to. So lender A, if they have too many home healthcare companies on their books inside their portfolio, they're going to stop lending to home healthcare companies because they have too much exposure, right? And then you go and those guidelines change constantly.
Well, then you go and find somebody else for them. So now,
Then we'll go to a different bank that likes home healthcare that's not overexposed in the sector at the time.
Got it. Nice. So you guys are not only SBA advisors, people that route, but also other types of lenders that exist. How much of your business is SBA? How much is it, let's call them other lenders that lend to business owners? Would you say approximately
25%?
25% SBA, 25% other lenders. Give us a crash course on these other lenders. Who are they? How much do they lend? What's the parameters they look at? Is it insured? Is it just their own money? Tell us about
it. It's both. I mean, listen, it's traditional banking institutions and private lenders and private credit, right? So everybody, when we think of lending, we know let's go to Chase, let's go to Wells Fargo, let's get a loan. That's a traditional banking lender, right? Then you have alternative lenders, or private credit is a big term that everybody's using these days.
Huge.
Private credit and alternative lenders are like me and Luigi. We have our own fund. If we like the deal, we like the person behind the deal, we will fund the deal. Now, the key difference between alternative lenders and banks, right? Alternative lenders, it's their own money. They don't have to qualify. Like they can make anything happen that they really want to make happen, right? Yeah. But they usually do have a box that they need to fit, you know? And again, some lenders want 700 credit. Some lenders don't care about credit. They just care about cash flow. So you got cash flow based lenders as well. You know, time in business is another thing, right? Time in business, even though I'm an alternative lender, I still want you to be in business for 2 years. Why? Because 2 years, that's the risk profile that we have.
Got it. Quickly on the private credit and the more institutional type of lenders like banks, SBA loan backed by SBA. What is the term? What is the interest rate for the SBA loans? And what is the term as interest rate of these loans for private credit?
I mean, they could vary, right? You have factoring, which is just another type of lending vehicle, right? Where what factors do is they buy accounts receivables from you, right? And as long as that's out, they can charge you 3% a month, right? Then you have revenue-based lenders that they also use a factor rate, right? And they don't use an interest rate because in certain states in the United States, there's usury laws. Right. However, revenue-based financiers will use a factor rate of a 125 or a 130. What does that really mean? It means you're paying 30% for the money. Essentially, what they're doing is, let's say you need to borrow $10,000, they're buying $13,000 worth of your future receivables, right? And traditionally speaking, those type of lenders, the way they mitigate their risk and the way we do it is we take our capital back on a daily or a weekly basis, right? So we're not waiting for one big payment at the end of the month. Now, from the lender's side, it's great. Because what happens if I'm bringing my money back in on a daily or a weekly basis, I'm redeploying that capital so the money keeps compounding, right? However, with those type of deals, right, you're usually dealing with what we call subprime borrowers. People that have less than a 650 credit score, they maybe can't show you full financials, right? But what you're lending based off of is their revenue profile. How much money is coming in the business and going out of the business, right? On a monthly basis based upon a historical trend. Right. So that's where we see a lot of people moving to. Now, another reason people use revenue-based financing is we can do $10 million in 72 hours. An SBA loan is going to take 3 to 4 weeks to get done.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. So if you need money tomorrow, no bank is going to give you that line of credit tomorrow.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not always about the interest rate or how much you're paying for the capital. It's about opportunity cost and how soon you need the money.
Mm-hmm. What's the most common need that people come and see you? Is it for growth? Is it for purchasing real estate, equipment? What is it for?
Generally speaking, we see a lot of people that got caught up in revenue-based financing loans, right? So they have these weekly and daily payments. They come to us to get them out of them and put them in more of a traditional—
Consolidate
them, put them in more of a traditional banking instrument.
Okay. Perfect. Got it. Learned about that. Any last words on that, Luigi, before we move to the next subject?
On lending?
Yeah.
I think it would help if we considered small business lending a little bit more of a custom suit rather than an off-the-rack suit, right? Because every business is created differently and every business has different credit and every business has different revenue and collateral. So for example, if you have a trucking company and you need money to buy more rigs or more trailers, then we get you an equipment loan because the collateral of that equipment allows you to get a low interest rate. Okay? If you have a very robust accounts receivable, you know, we can put either a purchase order financing or a factor in place because you only need the money for those 90 days and you need to absorb wages and supplies for those 90 days, right? So it's really a finding the right solution for the type of business and your cash flow.
Nice. And that's where you guys come in. So now let's talk about operations. Ava's going to love this. So we talked about lending, talk about operations. Client comes and sees you. You talked about situations where the burn rate is more than their cash flow. You talked about situations where they're trying to borrow more money than they need. Probably, there's situations where there is money left on the table for a lot of businesses. Efficiency.
Yeah.
Is that a consulting service you guys provide as well, you were mentioning, correct?
It is. It is. And I start the conversation with the same question all the time. If you and your family were to go away on vacation for 1 month and turn off your phone, what happens to your business? And you'd be surprised the answer is like, oh, I wouldn't have a business to come back to. Mm-hmm. So if you use that metric on a daily basis and you conduct yourself to put the SOP, the systems and processes in place and the team and the cash flow, you could one day go on vacation for a month.
All right. So SOPs, so some, acronym that we're very familiar with here at CPI.
Standard operating procedures.
Yes.
Yeah. They're in place for everything.
So very familiar with Gino Wickman and the book Traction and entrepreneurial operating system.
Yeah, so like Matthew loves to say, Matthew always says, you know, the entrepreneur should be working on the business, not in the business.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
So talk to us about a journey of a client that comes and sees you. Let's say funding is one aspect of it. Their cash flow is great. It's not a consolidating more. It's more about they want to bring in, borrow some money to grow their business. The business is doing great, but there's some operational issues. How do you guys come in and audit that? And what program do you put them on? And what type of consultants do you bring on? Do you upgrade their accounting? Do you upgrade their bookkeeper? Do you bring in these, the system that we talked about, if it's entrepreneurial operating system or other systems? Do you bring in softwares they could use? Like, how do you come in? And a lot of franchise businesses, for example, have these systems. A lot of mom and pop businesses don't. You must kind of discuss about that journey of a client coming in. How do you...
Which would be difficult because each industry is so different and there's so many arms in each company. Yeah.
We have a love-hate relationship with franchises, meaning we love the systems and processes in place and the branding and that turnkey operation. But sometimes the franchise agreement is so rigid that it handcuffs an entrepreneur from doing anything further. Like we had a company a few weeks ago that was providing like gymnastic type services for children.
Mm-hmm.
But their structure was very rigid. It had to be on a class basis, during certain hours for insurance purposes. And I could understand that. But if they wanted to offer a one-to-one or maybe like off-hours type schedules, their insurance didn't permit it, so they couldn't offer those services. Like, well, you're limiting your revenue based upon a certain time frame. You cannot scale. You simply cannot succeed. There's only so many rooms you have, and there's only so many people you can have working in those rooms per day. So there are certain models that just are flawed from the beginning. Mm-hmm. I'm just giving one example.
Sure.
I have a question for you guys. So have you guys ever advised a client to either, and I know you guys do the lending portion as well yourselves, but have you ever advised a client to say, hey, you guys should start looking for investors and give up a portion of your company rather than going and getting lending? Have you ever talked about that? Or have, my next question to follow that is, have you guys ever met with a business owner, absolutely fell in love with their model and said, hey, give us a portion of your company and we want to invest in your company. Instead of lending and getting an interest, you actually have an ownership stake. I'm curious about this because you guys meet so many different business owners. So talk to us a little bit about that, please.
So yes and yes.
I've seen a smile on Luigi's face there. So I'm like, I think I may have...
Everybody wants an investor, right? Yeah. And I'm very clear about this. Everybody thinks, oh, I need an investor so I don't have to pay anything back. But let's think about something here. If you have $1 million a year business, right? You could sell maybe for $1 million, you're there. You want to bring an investor in. He wants to give you $300,000. He's going to want 30% of that company.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
He's going to want 30% of that company for $300,000. Now let's flash forward 3 years, right? Now we're doing, I don't know, $5 million a year, right? We're doing $5 million a year. The multiple goes up because we went into a different range. Now we have a $15 million company. What's 30% of 15 million? Yeah, $5 million bucks for $300,000.
All right.
Right?
Yeah.
It kind of gets a little salty there, doesn't it?
You're selling your soul.
Yeah.
Right? And now also, what rights come in with this? What rights does the investor have? Is he passive? Does he think he owns the place? Let's say you own a restaurant. He's in there every day. He thinks he's eating for free.
And right? Does he have voting rights, right? And that can bump heads.
You don't have rights. Now he's taking 30% of the company and you want to grow. He doesn't want to sign that personal guarantee for the SBA loan to take another $5 million out. So what do? Do you buy him out? No, you don't really have the money. I mean, on paper you do.
Yeah.
Or would you take that $300,000, pay 30% on that $300,000, like in a revenue-based loan?
Mm-hmm.
Pay $90,000 for the cost of the money, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot cheaper than having that investor in there. So I always tell people,
$90,000 over one time period.
Yeah, what's the interest rate on a SBA?
Let's say 30%. No, not SBA. Forget SBA. I'm using expensive money here.
Yeah.
Say 12 months, 30%.
Okay.
Right? 12 months, 30%, right? If I execute, I'm that owner. I know where I'm going, right? Next year, I do $4 million. Then I'm at $5 million. Right? Multiple goes higher. It seems like a lot to pay that $100,000 to borrow $300,000 right then and now. But if you're executing and believe in yourself, I would do that every day of the week.
Yeah. If you put it into perspective like that, absolutely. And how about my second question, Luigi? You had a smile on your face there. Is there any other companies that you guys ever come across that you're like, hey, this is incredible. We can help this company grow and maybe we can actually invest in it ourselves and forget about lending. Yeah.
I'm laughing because Matt has an internal joke here at the company. I fall in love with one client a week, but I fall head over heels in love.
You do? That's
I'm like, oh my God, you got to see the carpentry work he does. You have to see the handrails. I'm doing unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, leave them alone. It's like, get out of here.
No, there is one client out of Minnesota, right? Brian. So Brian came to us. We helped him acquire a bunch of, funny, you just mentioned it before, but this is a different company, a bunch of gymnastic studios during COVID, right? So he came to us. We lent him money, debt. He went out and he acquired, I don't know, 15 or 16 gymnastic studios, right? Mm-hmm. And he was executing. Then he came to us and he said, hey guys, I got this vision. I want to bring on one of my friends that was a founder of Lifetime Fitness. I don't know if you guys ever heard of Lifetime.
Yeah.
And we want to build out a kid's gymnastic studio. Here's the land. Here's what I need.
Giant
flagship location. Goal is to put, you know, once the first one's up, another 12 in over the course of the next 3 to 5 years. And we invested for equity in that company.
Okay. Right on. Nice. Okay.
But there was a common thread, right? We fell in love with the company.
Yeah.
And he's a solid entrepreneur he's been doing it for 20 years.
Yeah, exactly. Nice.
Let's go back. Let's spend some time on operations. We talked about debt and lending stuff. Let's just talk about operations if we can. So Matthew, with your Wall Street background, business comes to you, how much of your time is spent making them more efficient, making them more financially literate about their spending and so on? Talk to us about that part of the services you guys provide.
So I'm going to be completely honest with you, right? I am more working on the business with the marketing team, bringing everybody in. Luigi's spending time on operations. He's our operations officer. I'll have a couple calls with clients. Luigi will have a couple calls. We'll do a couple calls together, right? But my time is very much focused going out, building relationships, right? Bringing deals to the table, right? And we just launched our capital advisory and introduction division, right? So these are higher companies, higher than 20 million that are looking for capital, right? And what I do is because, look, I raised $250 million on Wall Street, right? Doing everything from private placements, equity, bringing companies public, right? I'm working with those types of clients now, right? To introduce them to more family offices, right? Private equity firms, right? So the day-to-day with our book of clients, we probably spend, what, an hour a week, would you say, Lou, with the clients? Overall on the consulting side, because it's more about them executing.
Right.
We can talk to them all day long, but they have to go out and execute at the end of the day.
We've been avoiding the 800-pound gorilla in the room, and I think we should let him in for a second, okay? We can take out the bananas and explain to everyone, large banks in America are not fond of small to medium-sized businesses for various reasons. One, they have a high risk profile. Small businesses may fail. Small businesses, if they lean too heavily on a founder or an entrepreneur, and that entrepreneur gets the flu, gets sick, retires, right? There are many, many reasons why small business is not attractive to big banks. And when I say big banks, I talk about your big cash banks, Wells Fargo, Chase, even TD Bank. While they are Canadian in foundation, they have a huge presence in the States, right? So those are the big shop banks, okay? So now, when a small business is confronted with that stress in the market and trying to gain capital, you understand why all these hybrid solutions are so wildly successful. Like, I'm streaming right now from a hotel room because right after I sign off, I'm going to a lender conference. Why? To try to find more hybrid lenders for our clients, because the more creative solutions we have, the more successful we are. Mm-hmm. The more successful we are, the more referrals we get, right? So it's a recurring cycle. But our greatest sources of referrals and our best affiliate partners are CPAs and big bank managers, because they get so many declines that they send them to us and say, hey, Lou, can you help them out? This gentleman had a tax lien in the past, or this gentleman had a felony, or this gentleman had a bankruptcy, or this gentleman had an ingrown toenail. Like, those are the type of declines they get.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the lending part seems to be the bulk of your business. Operational side, you'll kind of look at it. You're not going to get in there, get your hands dirty. You talk about marketing. How much are you going to get involved in the marketing of a company? Do you see money left on the table? They're not doing too much marketing, or do you leave that to other consultants?
No, when we see a void or a blind spot in a business model, we'll make a referral to someone that could build in either an SEO campaign or a marketing campaign or a drip. Whatever we think is missing there, we'll try to help and recommend it. We'll make an introduction, but it's basically just a very warm introduction.
Okay, fair enough.
The same thing with accountancy. When we see books that are in disarray, we have a stable of solid accountants and bookkeepers that we are very, very fond of, just that we can make that introduction, because there's no reason an entrepreneur should suffer because their books are in disarray. That's just unacceptable.
Fair enough. Yeah. Let's talk on the last point of here before we move to our next segment of our show. But let's talk about exits, right? That's something we discussed from early on. You guys advise for exits as well, or is that part of your business? Is that as well? For somebody comes, sees you, maybe they don't even know, but halfway through talking with you guys, they're like, hey, you seem like you're already talking about retirement or exiting. Is this something you want to do? What is your level of consulting? How much do you get involved in that portion of it? Because usually it's a business broker that gets involved in exit, right? Or talk to us about that part of it.
Yeah. So I'm a CEPA, a certified exit planning advisor as well. And it was just the next natural extension for our business of what we're doing over here. Because first, when I left Wall Street, by the way, my partners bought me out. I was a partner in an investment bank. I grew it from four of us to 80 registered reps, right? I got into private lending. Then we got into consulting. I'm like, all right, I'm writing people checks. Why don't I help them and consult, right? Now I'm consulting for them. It's that one simple question that nobody really asks themselves, right? Okay, what am I doing this all for? What's next for me? What do I want to do next? Am I going to sell my business? Am I going to leave it with my kids? Do I even have a plan? You don't know how many entrepreneurs don't even have that in their head. They're just going through the motions to create cash flow for today and tomorrow. They're not thinking beyond that, right? Because they're just moving so fast, working in the business, like Luigi said, rather than on the business. So let's say we're working with somebody. We get them funded. We help them start scaling. What do you want next, right? When do you see yourself retiring? When do you see yourself possibly selling the business? What do you think you could sell the business for, right? And then you get all these rando answers. Oh, I don't know. I never thought about that. Well, my buddy down the block, you know, he sold the same business that I have. And, you know, he got $5 million for it. Okay. What does he do? Well, I'm a mechanic, but he sold tires. I'm like, so how did you come up with the same multiple? So what we'll do at that point is we'll bring in a financial advisor with us, right? And we'll see what they have personally, what the value of their business is, and what their wealth gap is, the amount of money that they need to retire comfortably, right? Here's the problem. 80% of business owners, all their worth and their net worth is tied up in their business, right? If they have 20% of their net worth in stocks and bonds, it's a lot, right? So what we need to do is we need to take an overall picture of the amount of money that they need to retire, see where their business is now, and see how we can adjust that multiple, right? And sometimes it's just about crossing the T's, dotting the I's. Oh, I've been doing business with Steve for 6 years. Do you have any contracts? Contracts add value to the business, right? What can we get? How can we get reoccurring revenue here? Reoccurring revenue adds value to the business. So we can increase that multiple higher as we go along. Now that's a 2 to 3 year process, right? To get that done. That doesn't happen overnight, but there's little things that you can do along the way that make your business more valuable. You know, non-competes, right? How active are you in the business? Because the last thing I want to do is when I go in, I want to buy a business. I don't want to buy a job. I want a business that runs itself. So the first thing we need to really do is work on getting that owner out of the business to make it more valuable. Luigi has a joke too. You know, when somebody's calling John's Plumbing and John answers the phone all the time, that's not a business.
Yeah, that's right. Very true.
Any questions before we get next segment, Ava?
Yeah, just one last question for you guys, kind of how I started off the show. This might be a bit difficult question to answer, but have you guys been able to pinpoint what really does separate businesses that stay small from those that break through to the next level? Have you guys been able to kind of pinpoint a couple different things or one particular factor?
It comes down to ownership, right? Who's driving the business, right? Okay. Are they complacent? Did they get comfortable? What do they see next? You know, did they surround themselves and build a good team is really what it comes down to, right?
That's true.
You can be the greatest salesperson, greatest marketer, greatest, I don't know, technician in the world, but you can't do it all.
Yeah.
And you can't scale.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. When we co-founded CPI Capital 5 years ago, 5.5 years ago now, August said to me, are you ready to become a great manager? Because you're not going to be able to do what you're doing. And then also we started building our family, right? We have two sons now. He's like, listen, you can't do it all. As much as you like to have your fingertips on the pulse of everything that's going on and be in control of everything, you got to become an amazing manager. So that aligns with exactly what they just said. So that's amazing.
There's also one character trait that cannot be overlooked. And it's got to be tenacity. Your founder, owner, entrepreneur has to be tenacious. I'll give you a very simple example. Matthew and I have achieved a certain age where we can look back and say, wow, we've covered a lot of ground. But that ground also covered several acts of God that shut down our businesses. They involved terrorist attacks, multiple, which shut down our businesses. Personal incidents that may happen that give us setbacks. Storms. I mean, stuff happens.
Yeah.
People quit. People get pregnant. People retire. Like your business is a bullseye for incidents. So if you're not tenacious and try to overcome it, and I'll give you a perfect example today. If you look at our company, we have a host of redundancies. Now you may say, why are you guys spending money on this? And we have redundancies in place because we don't want to suffer how we did in the past. But that comes from experience, right? If I tell you, look, you need two of this and two of that and two of this, you're like, well, that's just a waste of money. No, it's not a waste of money because if your business is shut down for 2 months, you'll realize that lost business is not a waste of money.
Absolutely.
If you think about it, if your number one salesperson comes in and resigns tomorrow, but they were driving 80% of the revenue, you're in trouble.
Yeah, game over. Absolutely.
So taking that from our businesses, right? That's another thing we do when we're looking to exit, right? We want to see what concentration of revenue is coming from how many different businesses and diversify that out. Mm-hmm. If we sell widgets to IBM and IBM accounts for 90% of our revenue and they pull the contract, do we even have a business anymore?
No.
Right? So that's another little thing that makes businesses more valuable than the other.
Unless you have some blackmail information on IBM.
I like the way it works, man.
Unless then you brought them to your island, had a great time. They're not going over. All right, we'll move to the next part of our next segment of our show.
Next segment, the 10 championship rounds to financial freedom. So we're going to ask you guys a series of questions. Matt, we're going to begin with you. Are you guys ready?
Let's go.
Okay, let's do this. First question. Matt, who's been the most influential person in your life?
My wife.
Oliver.
Hands down, my wife.
Oliver, yeah.
You can elaborate on that a bit if you'd like.
Yeah, I mean, look, before my wife, there was Matt. Matt was wild. Matt was crazy. Nice. She definitely put structure. She definitely...
in New York, you know?
Yeah, listen, she definitely put structure in my life.
Nice.
And she was able to tame me a little bit where nobody else couldn't, so.
Nice.
Matthew's the reason the SBA has that blacklist for sin industries.
No vice industries, exactly. Exactly. All right, Luigi, who's been the most influential person in your life?
My grandfather. And my wife is going to be a close second, with the one caveat that I've only known my wife for 5 years and I knew my grandfather for 30.
Wow, okay.
I mean, our wife's coming later on in our lives, right? So
that's right. Exactly.
Whose face do you see right away, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right,
next question. Matt, what's the number one book you'd recommend?
One? Okay, I could only pick one.
Give a few.
Yeah, anything you like.
Who Moved My Cheese? You guys ever read that one?
No, never heard of it.
It's a really good book. It's about two mice.
Is it Dr. Seuss?
No, it's who? I definitely have it.
The Dr. Seuss.
No, but I mean, it's a really good book. It's a short read, maybe 100 pages.
Okay.
And really the book is, look, don't get complacent. There's two mice. They're in a maze, right? They don't know where to go. One takes his shoes off. We don't need that because they found a big source of food, right? That food runs out. The mouse has no more shoes. The other one tied the shoes around his neck and held them for later and kept moving, right? So that's the essence of the book. I like
right
that.
On. Okay, nice. Luigi, what's the number one book you'd recommend?
I'm going to cheat. But it's not really cheating. I love Ayn Rand and the three books that she wrote. And there were technically three books, but they were like a continuity of capitalism as seen by a Soviet immigrant, right? So there was Anthem, Fountainhead, and... Atlas Shrugged, thank you. Yeah.
Okay.
I make a point of reading those three books every 5 years.
His name is Atlas, so...
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, right on. Okay, next question. Matt, if you had the opportunity to travel back in time, what advice would you give your younger self?
If you go back to any age.
Get married sooner. Yeah, any age. Yeah, any age.
Oh, no. No, not get married sooner. I had fun before. I got married at 26, so that's pretty
good. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, buy as much stock as I could in Google and Apple.
All right. Okay, and Luigi? If you had the opportunity to travel back in time, what advice would you give your younger self?
I have to take your answer. I would have gotten married sooner. I wish I would have met my wife, Tina, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years ago. But I just don't think she would have liked me back then. I was a very different person.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything's about timing, right?
Did more and got married sooner.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Next question. Matt, what's the best investment you've ever made?
Paying for my Series 7 class. So I had a watch. It's the only thing that I had of value to my name was a Movado watch, right? I sold it for pennies on the dollar, right? So I could afford to pay the $500 to buy my books for my Series 7 class.
Nice. Love that.
Investing in yourself.
Investing in yourself, yeah. And Luigi, how about you?
Partnering with Matthew.
Nice. That's so sweet. I love that. Incredible.
No, no. I have this rule about investing. When everyone is running one way, you got to run the opposite way.
That's true. Yeah, exactly. It works. It works.
Jeff.
Everybody was buying gold. I sold it. Oh, God.
Oh, I got that.
Sorry. How did you guys meet?
We met on Wall Street.
Okay.
That's why we named our podcast the Liquid Lunch Project. Back then, deals would occur more often over a beer. I remember Matt and I used to, our offices were very, very near each other. And there was a popular restaurant bar called Bobby Van's. And I remember the bartender would always have this wonderful, witty saying, a good Irishman. He'd say, "This place is always packed. You guys love to come here to celebrate or commiserate?
The world is busy." Oh, nice. Okay, so that's how you guys met. All right, awesome. Okay, next question, Matt. What's the worst investment you've ever made, and what lessons did you learn from it?
Ooh, the worst investment. There's no one that I'm just like, oh, that was bad. Okay.
Well, that's good.
I got something. But there's a silver lining to this, right? My parents were going through foreclosure, so I just bought the house, right? And they wound up moving. Okay. It was my second property. I had no idea what was going on. My numbers were all off. All we did was lose money on this thing. Right. So I wound up selling that for pennies on the dollar too. But at least they got out of foreclosure and they were able to move.
Nice. Nice. That's a great son. Luigi, how about you? What's the worst investment you've ever made and what lessons did you learn from it?
Back in the 05, 06 real estate boom in America, when interest rates were very low and there was 103% financing. Yes, that was a thing. Like, could you imagine, given today's underwriting criteria, back then they were financing 103% of loan value, of real estate value. I got overexposed. I bought too much real estate in 06 and 07. I was lucky because the property did increase eventually, but yeah, there were a couple of lean years.
What lesson did you learn?
Don't over leverage. Like my grandfather used to say, if you don't have the cash in your pocket, you can't afford it.
Right.
The Achilles heel of real estate is leverage.
Yeah, that's true. All right, next question, Matt. How much would you need in the bank to retire today? What's your number?
I don't know if there is a number. I think I just need enough money in the bank to do what I want when I want.
Nice.
I don't think there's a set number.
Nice. Perfect. And how about you, Luigi?
My number is more of a lifestyle than it is a number in the bank. Meaning, I today, and people change, right? Like, I'm not who I was when I was 40. I'm not who I was when I was 30. But today, I can't see myself sitting down and watching TV or reading a newspaper and just being retired without a hobby, right? So I'd have to find something that was super active to keep me mentally and physically active. And my wife understands that. So I don't know what it is. I think I have a couple of ideas of what it could be, but I haven't figured that out yet. So I'd have to find a schedule that affords me to be active and also be able to bounce my grandkids on my lap. And who knows, maybe I'm still stuck with Matt.
There you go. Nice. Nice. All right. Next question, guys. Matt, if you could have dinner with someone dead or alive, who would it be?
I don't want to have dinner with my grandmother again.
Nice.
Yeah.
Paternal?
My mom's mother, she passed away and I was just getting started out. And I think I just wanted to meet her great grandkids.
Right. How about you, Luigi?
That's a beautiful sentiment, Matt. Yeah. I can't answer with my grandfather again because I already answered that with the first question. But I'm going to throw you for a curveball. Benjamin Franklin. Because he was probably the baddest ass in a group of badass gentlemen.
General, founding father. I mean, did a lot, right?
He was everything, that guy.
No, with those guys pulled off back then,
yeah.
I know we call them our founding fathers and there's a certain deference to them, but I don't think we understand how much they suffered and the turmoil they were put through just to pull off. I mean, could you imagine if you told one of the, St. Thomas, let's tell St. Thomas to declare independence from the United States. It's not going to go well.
Yeah.
Exactly. And imagine pulling it off.
Exactly. That's a good one. We never got Benjamin Franklin before, have we? Yeah. That's awesome.
Zidane's, Abe Lincoln, you got a lot of different ones.
But also keep in mind that Matt and I are Americans, right? So
yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we are.
Still registered.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. All right. Next question, Matt. If you could, sorry, if you weren't doing what you're doing today, what would you be doing now?
Training dolphins.
Training dolphins?
Yeah. No. What would I be doing now?
Okay. I was like, really?
You know,
he has a love for dolphins.
Honestly, I can't tell you because, you know, look, I already had one career in a prior life. You know, I was on Wall Street for 20 years.
Yeah.
Right. And now I'm doing this. It's great. More active in real estate now. So I think I'm moving towards what I would be doing anyway while still maintaining this.
Was there something else like in sports or anything else in life that, you know, could have possibly taken you that way, but you...
Oh, yeah. So there's something for the longest time in like high school and middle school, I did Taekwondo. I'm a third degree black belt in Taekwondo and I was training. Okay. I thought I was going to the Olympics, blah, blah, blah. Flash forward, that's why I was working at a diner and I didn't do really well in school because all I cared about was Taekwondo. I thought I'd maybe open a school back then one day and do that, but I don't see myself doing that anymore.
Nice.
And a badass cop, you know, Taekwondo, you know?
Yeah. Yes, that's right.
Is that the one where you have to wear that big, thick, wedgie, like pajama type thing and you go,
no buddy, that's just another dig. I guess you call me a sumo wrestler.
Sumo wrestler.
No, I get confused with the Asian martial arts. I'm sorry buddy.
Yeah. Oh geez. How about you, Luigi? If you weren't doing what you're doing today, what would you be doing now?
I would love to have been a professional sailor, right?
Cool.
But think of what the word amateur means. Amateur, right? One that loves what he does. Right. So if you do something as a hobby, you tend to love it. But if you have to do it for work, you probably won't love it anymore. Right. So I don't know. I have like this love-hate relationship because I'm scared that if I were to ever have become a professional sailor, I maybe wouldn't have loved it because then it was just a job.
Right.
I hate
to sail. Oh, that's beautiful. All right. Next question, Matt. Book smarts or street smarts?
Street smarts.
Street smarts all the way. Awesome.
All the way. All the way.
How about you, Luigi? And, oh, go ahead, Matt.
No, all the way. Look, I could always give you a book and you can read it, right? But if I bring you in the middle of New York City, you know, do you know who to stay away from?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. How about you, Luigi? What are your thoughts on that? Book smarts or street smarts?
Street smart. I'm still a kid from Brooklyn and I read a room when I walk into it. So all those degrees, I think they were in lieu of me hiding my street smarts.
Nice.
Okay, Matt, last question, okay? If you had $1 million in cash and you had to make one investment today, what would it be?
$1 million in cash and one investment.
Yeah.
Today, I'd probably sell puts on the S&P 500.
All right.
As of today.
Is that, you're shorting it? What is?
I'm short, yeah. And that's only a short-term trade for the next 12 months.
All right.
Okay.
Luigi?
I take that money and put it into my investment portfolio with the same percentages I'm in now. So I still think the American stock market is still has room to grow. I still think investing in America is still solid. Nice. I don't think we're a perfect country, but I still think business-wise, we're still solid.
Yeah, definitely.
No, I think for the next 3 years.
So you guys are perfect partners. Luigi's would diversify across his portfolio, and Matt would just short and pee. You got the risky and the risk-averse.
Yeah,
but I think he's 100% correct. I just think over the micro, I think we're going to have a 10, 15% pullback.
Which is fine, because that happens, right?
Yeah, and you just set it and forget it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Awesome, guys. Okay, well, this has been amazing. If you guys can just let everybody, let all the viewers know how they can get in contact with you, that would be great.
Absolutely. You guys can come listen to our show. It's called The Liquid Lunch Project. You can find it on any major podcast platform provider. Or if you're looking for business funding or you want to reach out to us and see what your business is doing, you can find us at creditbank.io or shieldadvisorygroup.com.
Right on. Thank you guys so much. This has been great.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode. We hope this conversation enlightened you on how to win big in this highly profitable and risk-averse space. Get on your feet and embrace this world that offers so many opportunities just waiting for you out there. Continue your journey to becoming a savvy real estate expert by subscribing to the show at cpicapital.ca. Don't forget to leave a positive rating and share with your friends. See you on the next one.